Hi, everybody. Welcome to Friday at TYT. And guess what? Since it's Friday, we are going to have, what do you call it again?
Power panel,
baby. The power panel. Let's take a look. Let's take a look.
That was quite a video we took a look at. Yeah. That was great.
Oh, man. Ben Mankiewicz, Jimmy Dore. You guys know who these people are. I mean, do I really have to name them? I mean, unless you're a new viewer or whatever.
I've been on so infrequently, perhaps.
I know.
You're a busy man, Ben.
I'm a busy
man. He's been riding motorcycles and, like, he was a new guest on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. Did Steve McQueen know you were going through his closet?
I wish.
You got a six pack in your bag?
I do.
All right.
Let me show you the back, my gang. Yeah.
That doesn't have. I can't think of the thing.
Are you a biker for Trump?
I'm totally a biker.
That doesn't have Hard Rock Hotel on it. How could that be cool?
This one was a lame. I bought this in Italy.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. And you know how?
Made in Italy.
Right next to the mustard there. It says made in Italy.
Nice.
I'm going to go to Italy this summer.
It's nice.
Have you ever been, Anna?
I have, yes.
It's a
long time ago.
Oh, I bet the guys were all over you, huh?
Italian men are very aggressive.
Forward, right?
Yeah. The last time I went to Europe was in 2014. I went to Spain, and there were a lot of Italian tourists there. And they don't hold back. I will just leave it there.
Okay. Michael Shore would object vehemently, but my Italy advice for anybody going to Italy, no Venice.
No Venice.
Yeah.
What?
No Venice.
Why
Venice
that?
Is amazing. Yeah. Venice was actually I went to Florence, which was nice.
Awesome, Florence, love Florence.
Rome.
The best, my favorite city, maybe
we
in the world.
We are opposites because Rome was my least favorite and Venice was my absolute favorite.
You know, there are no roads in Venice. It's ridiculous.
What?
You have to take a friggin' boat.
Everywhere? Really?
Yeah, you know what it smells
terrible.
Like?
Terrible, I mean.
Smells like fish?
Smells like fish. And then they serve you fish and the head's on it. And it's just enough with Venice, enough.
Venice is great.
Okay.
Anyway, all right. We are going to have one heck of a show for you.
Basta with Venice. I'm pretty sure that's not how you say enough, but it might be.
As you guys know, there is a lot of news about the House vote to replace Obamacare with something that would give you less coverage and would consider all sorts of crazy things, pre-existing conditions. So we are going to give you some updates on that story. Later on, we are going to talk about what some people are doing in the name of political activism that I think is really, really smart and clever and edgy. So we'll cover that. And then in the second hour, Grace Baldridge will join us to cover all sorts of fun stuff, including Vogue India and how they made a questionable decision for their latest cover. So let's get to the news. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Ready.
All right, let's do it. Donald Trump was visiting Australia and had a conversation with the Prime Minister, and he had some pretty interesting things to say about the healthcare system in Australia and how he felt that it's actually better than what we have in the United States. Take a look.
Right now, Obamacare is failing. We have a failing healthcare. I shouldn't say this to our great gentleman and my friend from Australia, because you have better healthcare than we do. But we're going to have great healthcare very soon.
Wow,
that's interesting, because in Australia they actually have government-funded universal health care. Now, some people do have to buy private insurance to cover certain things, but just to give you some details, Australia has a universal government-funded health care system called Medicare. Okay, so citizens there must purchase private insurance for some medical services. The system is partially funded by taxes, including an additional tax on wealthy Australians. So literally the antithesis of what Republicans, what the GOP is pushing for. And it's interesting because we always have these conversations about whether or not Trump even knows about the legislation, the details about the legislation that he pushes for. And it's clear, I mean, just from this one video, that he doesn't, because if you knew what was in this legislation in the United States versus what's going on in Australia, then you would know that your statement made absolutely no sense whatsoever. But
well, First of all, are we going to start referring, before we speak to someone, do we say our great gentleman? Is that a thing that we're now going to do?
Sounds
that,
fun.
Do you have something to say first, our great gentleman, Jimmy?
I have something to say. What's another word for gentleman?
Sir.
Yeah. Good sir.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. Our good sir,
yeah,
great gentleman.
Good sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good sir, great gentleman. I'll say, so, like, if we had universal health coverage here, I'm pretty sure you would still be able to buy extra insurance.
Like, yeah.
That thing would still exist, so people who want that would still be able to have it. And that would create another issue of some, but again, what we're looking for is a base of services, but a base that's a respectable base. Like, we can't just have a base where you're like allowed to get sick and go to and then buy Robitussin. Like, that's what Republicans seem to
want. But what about even sick babies we would cover?
Do we really want to do that? Babies get sick a lot.
I was reading the Washington Times, and they're like, that's bullshit.
Now, I guess in this story, what's not in here, and this is, which are the services that they have to pay extra for? I'm playing devil's advocate. If it were, if it's oncology services, then that's not enough that they're providing. But I bet it's not.
But if it's like Viagra and hair transplants, maybe that should be an additional.
Right, that's okay, right? We want to, but that baseline has to be reasonable, a baseline that keeps people healthy, not only healthy, but keeps them financially secure should a significant medical issue hit someone in their family. It's not complicated.
So I remember.
I'm sorry. But in answer to your main question, no, he doesn't know.
He doesn't know. No, and that's the amazing thing. So. This vote that happened in the House was much more about politics versus policy, because for Republicans, and it's amazing to me because I think it's bad politics, because so many Americans are up in arms, both on the right and the left, about what's happening right now. Anyone who's paying attention is not happy. It doesn't matter what your political ideology is. It's clear that there are some serious issues with what the House passed. But in the perspective of these lawmakers, it's like, we gotta show that we're doing something. We gotta show that we've achieved something. Trump is obsessed with showing that he has achieved something. And it doesn't matter what the wording of the legislation is. It doesn't matter what it includes or what it entails or how it's gonna impact Americans. They just wanna point to it and say, we did something. And the reality is, that's bad politics if Americans don't want it, if they reject it. Right, and that's what we're seeing right now in regard to the reaction by the American people to this legislation. And again, I'm seeing like an objection from the right as well, which I think is fascinating.
Well, I make two quick points. You know, him saying this offhandedly to the Australian Prime Minister reminds me of when he was on David Letterman before he was president or was running, and he talked about being in Scotland playing golf. He's got a golf course, whatever. He's talking to David Letterman, and he was talking about how somebody got hurt and they had to go to the hospital in Scotland. And he was like, it was fantastic, $10, cost $10, they fixed a broken arm. It was like, and David Letterman was like, yeah, it's fantastic. And he goes, oh yeah, it's much better than ours. So this guy knows, even though he's an out-of-touch billionaire and he doesn't have a need for health insurance because he can pay everything out of his pocket, he understands that it's better in other countries, and he understands what systems are better, meaning Medicare for all systems. He just said Australia's got a better one. He's known, and him and David Letterman, a couple of millionaires sitting around laughing about how much better somebody else's healthcare is than the one here in the United States. So just so you know that, they know that it's better. Everybody knows that Medicare for all is the answer. You know, you said that this was bad. First of all, this plan, like you said, Anna, cuts $1 trillion in taxes from the wealthiest people in the country. So when people say, hey, Medicare, how are you going to pay for that? Right now, we're giving the richest people in the world who don't need a tax cut $1 trillion tax cut. That's how you could pay for it, right there. You could pay. One more thing where you said that this is bad politics. Mm-hmm. This is bad politics for them. The Democrats should have a bloodbath right now going in 2018. They should kill the Republicans. I might be slightly off by one, but I think something like 24 Republicans in districts that Donald Trump did not carry. Voted for this bill. So now that means they're vulnerable because they're in districts that Hillary Clinton carried and they voted for this health care plan.
And
they should be able to flip those seats to Democrat, and then the Democrats take over the Congress.
And of course, that you're right. It's 24, and that's just the seats that he didn't carry. That doesn't count the seats he won 52, 48, 51,
right.
49, 50, that are close and
right.
competitive, which could also swing those districts. Also, $800 billion cut from Medicaid. $800 billion cut from Medicaid. And then you got Kevin McCarthy coming on TV and saying, well, we're not, no one on Medicaid will be cut. That's because people who are on Medicaid go off Medicaid, sometimes with death. But it will be much harder to get on Medicaid. You can't cut $800 billion from a program and not have it affect someone.
I know.
So, you know, you talk about it being bad politics, though. This is what the right wing does. Because if you remember during the Clinton impeachment, everyone knew that the country was not behind impeaching Bill Clinton. In fact, the public opinion polls were the other way. And that it said that the Republicans were going to take a hit politically. If they did it, they did it anyway. You know why? Because the Republicans serve their base, whereas the Democrats mock their base.
Right, and I just really quickly want to jump in before everyone, you know, forgets this component of the story that I think is important. So you had asked the question about what the public insurance program in Australia does cover.
Yes.
And I think that that's really relevant. We did look into that prior to the show, and I want to pull up that information. So there are three healthcare components of the Medicare program in Australia. There are medical services, including visits to general practitioners and other medical practitioners. That's all covered. Prescription pharmaceuticals.
Covered?
Covered, yes.
Oh, that's a big one.
Hospital treatment as a public patient. The latter is jointly funded by the Australian and state territory governments. I want to be clear about something, though. If you are at a certain income level, the government emphasizes that you need to go toward private insurance because they want to take, you know, some of the financial burden away from the publicly funded insurance. So there are people that rely more on private insurance, but it's based on income. Also, other health services provided by national and state territory government, population health programs, community health services, health and medical research, Aboriginal health services, mental health services.
It's covered.
Oh, mental health services are covered. That's amazing. I mean, here in the United States, we only talk about mental health when there's a mass shooting and we want to use that as a scapegoat instead of talking about guns, health workforce, and also health infrastructure.
Sound like a bunch of snowflakes down there.
The Australian government responsibilities include health service funding, regulation of health products, service and workforce, national health policy leadership. So these are bullet points, and obviously these are, you know, if we were to sit here and explain every single little thing, we'd be here all day. But they cover
a lot.
And so it's not like basic insurance where they're like, if you get sick, you know, we might allow you to come see a doctor and you'd only have to pay a $50 copay for it. You know, it's actually pretty comprehensive.
We'll give you a splint, not a cast.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
So you're telling me in Australia, they force some people to pay for other people's health care. That's what's going on, because that's how the right wing frames this.
Right. There is an extra cost for the wealthiest people in Australia.
Oh my God.
And the interesting thing is, and look, this is anecdotal, but I think it's relevant. When I first traveled out of the country, I did so through a tour group called Contiki. And I think it's an Australian company. The vast majority of people that are in that group are Australian. Those are the people I was traveling with. And we did have a conversation about healthcare because I was curious, you know, what is healthcare like in Australia? And, you know, our politicians tell us time and time again that people in Canada are miserable with healthcare. They hate it.
Yes.
And you know, there's a similar system in Australia. And guess what? They all loved it. They're befuddled by the fact that we have to go through so many obstacles and pay so much money just to get basic care.
You know, people don't like healthcare anywhere because they have to go to it when they're sick. Right. So it's a bad time no matter what. Nobody in Canada is like, well, I'm getting sick in Canada. I love the flu. I have gout. I was so happy. I got to go to the doctor. And that's a pleasure in Toronto, eh? To your earlier point, and Jimmy, like you said, it's politics over policy. And obviously, look, it's Congress, everything. There's politics because they spent now since 2011, scream, or 2000, whenever. Whenever Obamacare passed, they've been saying they'll repeal it. Mm-hmm. So this is politics. They had to deliver on a very basic promise to a base voter that they, as Jimmy said, are super loyal to. But I disagree that it's politics over policy. It is a combination. This is policy.
Mm-hmm.
They are very comfortable with a health system in America where millions of people are uninsured. That's policy.
Yes.
They think the private sector should take care of it, period, end of discussion. That's policy. They're proud of themselves for that.
So I agree with you that there is some portion of the House that does not care. They know what the policy is and they're okay with it because they, I don't know, they just don't think the lives of Americans who can't afford private insurance don't really matter that much, I guess. But the reason why I think that it has less to do with policy is because they rushed this vote. They rushed it so quickly. You know, the budget office, the CBO didn't even have a chance to analyze it. They didn't care, right? A lot of the representatives didn't even read the legislation themselves, and we have evidence of that, okay?
But also, I love those questions because suppose they'd read it. They don't know what it would have meant if they'd read it. And I'm not making fun of them. We don't have the best and the brightest there, right? I mean, we've seen it. Look at their hair. Right? You know these guys aren't serious people. Like just everything. So there's some smart guys there, but there are also, this is not a job, and partly because of the nonsensical way that we elect them. And because if you get the nomination on either side, generally, well, that's it. Depending on whether it's a safe blue seat or a safe red seat, that's it. So no, of course they didn't read it. I don't care if they read it.
I do care if they read it. That's actually a separate story that we're going to get to in just a second.
But the reason that it's still policy, even though, yes, everything you say is true, what this is policy-wise is it got explained to them in one sentence, which is, and that sentence is basically, states will be able to do whatever they want, which means states can do nothing. And that's essentially what this will allow. With some very bare minimums, this will allow states to do essentially nothing. That's what they want, a system where people don't have, where the market takes care of itself. And that's it. So they would not say that we don't care. They would say, if I'm going to defend them, they would say the last people who should be involving themselves in healthcare is the United States government, even though we acknowledge that the United States government should take care of its soldiers. They would acknowledge that. So it's some role that they have. The people most vulnerable to getting shot and torn apart, the government can handle that. But the population in general, government involvement would be a mistake. They don't want government involved. They don't want government to do anything.
Except,
so this bill is ideal for them policy-wise.
Except they did exempt themselves from this legislation, so they do want the government to provide health care for themselves.
Right, for them and their families. As long as they're protected, that's all that matters.
Yeah, so the Democrats should be able to capitalize on this and take back over Congress without even trying. It's going to be interesting to find how they screw this up.
I don't remember whose tweet it was, but a conservative, I think it was Ross Duhat. Is that who
he's
saying? From the Washington Post. He was criticizing congressional Republicans. He was like, the only thing more amazing than congressional Republicans is how congressional Democrats keep losing to them.
It is pretty amazing.
Yes.
Now, so let's move on because there is a Bernie component to the story, okay. And I always love a Bernie component. So Donald Trump met with the Prime Minister of Australia and admitted that Australia's healthcare system is actually better than the healthcare system here in the United States. He said it's a very good bill right now in response to the American Healthcare Act. The premiums are going to come way down very substantially. The deductibles are going to come down. It's going to be fantastic healthcare. Right now, Obamacare is failing. We have a failing healthcare. He also said, I shouldn't say this to our great gentleman and my friend from Australia because you do have better healthcare than we do. So that was his statement. Keep in mind that Australia does have universal healthcare. They actually call it Medicare and they do cover quite a bit for most citizens. Now, interestingly enough, Bernie Sanders did capitalize or at least take advantage of this great opportunity to make a point about about Donald Trump and how important universal healthcare really is. Take a look at what he said during this interview.
They do have universal health.
Wait a minute, Chris. All right, the president has just said it. That's great. Let's take a look at the Australian healthcare system. And let's move. Maybe let's take a look at the Canadian health system or systems throughout Europe. Thank you, Mr. President. Let us move to a Medicare for all system that does what every other major country on earth does, guarantee health care to all people at a fraction of the cost per capita that we spend. Thank you, Mr. President. We'll quote you on the floor of the Senate.
I hope they do.
So majority of Americans now understand what single payer means. Before they didn't, and now they understand what Medicare for all means. To the point where Charles Krauthammer last week wrote an editorial saying that he believes single payer is now inevitable. Charles Krauthammer said that. And he said that because no matter.
Then he shot himself in the head.
And he didn't shoot himself in the head.
So there's no place for me in America. I'm out. Yeah.
So It is coming. And the fact that Bernie Sanders, his unity tour was originally supposed to be a Medicare for All tour, which got hijacked by Tom Perez, and he turned it into a unity tour because he couldn't have Bernie going out there getting people worked up for Medicare because the corporate Democrats are against Medicare for All. Therefore, Romney Care, which is what we have now. Okay, so that's all I want to say.
All right, so look, I love that people are waking up. I think that's the important thing, because as discouraging as that House vote was, I think the response is a silver lining. It shows that now more than ever, Americans on both sides are very aware, they're very engaged, they're paying attention, because whether they want to believe it or not, and I'm talking about the right, they enjoyed certain aspects of the Affordable Care Act. You know, they enjoyed certain protections. You know, I know that I'm liberal, but my mom called me yesterday and she was scared, and she's like, what does this mean for me? Are they going to kick me off my insurance? Because, you know, she had a kidney transplant. And it was terrifying, right? And so I explained to her, look, this is just the House voting. It's unlikely to pass in the Senate, but we have to fight this and that. And those are the kinds of conversations that Americans, regardless of their political ideology, are having right now. They're scared. Yeah. And so I think the political activism is something that we can look forward to. I love that people like Bernie go out there and they spread the message and the truth about what healthcare really is. Like the upsides of universal healthcare, the downsides of the system we have now. What the GOP is really doing behind the scenes as they lie to our faces and tell us that we'll still have those protections that we're enjoying under the Affordable Care Act.
So go ahead, Ben.
I'm curious, you know, you mentioned Democrats sort of and corporate Democrats not wanting universal healthcare. By the way, your mom maybe don't have the kidney transplant. Okay, I'm just saying.
I mean, it's her fault for having that kidney transplant.
I like people who have their original kidneys. I'm just, you know, that's how I choose my friends, you know. Hey, I'm Ben. How you doing? You two kidneys? Yours? Okay, great. Well, let's go to lunch. I just wouldn't hang out with your mom. It's not a big deal.
even the worst.
even if she had great hair?
Well, no, it doesn't matter. I draw the line at kidneys. You got to draw a line somewhere. It's my red line. Okay. So, you know, you're correct. Corporate Democrats don't want universal health care. What's it? But it does not, I don't think, because it's overly simplistic, that is the only reason why Democrats who argued for years for universal health care now don't support it or don't think it's right politically. Like, say, I'm using Nancy Pelosi as an example. I think they're wrong, but.
Oh, good.
There's a political component to it where they think that arguing for, well, we know at the moment of the Affordable Care Act that universal health care would have killed the Affordable Care Act, right? At that moment, you could argue that 20 years of screaming for it would have put them in a different point, but and I would make the same argument. So what's interesting to me is this a turning point? As you say, more than half of Americans now know what single payer is. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I didn't know that about Charles Krauthammer. Mm-hmm. So are we at a turning point where now Democrats who aren't totally just simplistically beholden to corporate Democrats, and there are plenty, to corporate power structure, might be able to recognize, wait a minute, this is a political moment to seize on. These are politicians.
Yes.
And you sense somehow that rather than thinking if the alternative to Trump care was single payer, there is an old way of looking at that, which would say, Jesus, that'll mean they'll vote for Trump care. So we have to have something like the ACA because we'll lose. There has to be a moment, you hope, where enough Democrats and some Republicans and sane people say, no, wait. We'll win that single payer versus Trump care argument. I'm certain that there are Democrats terrified that if that's the choice given, that we'll go with Trump care because there will be a determinative ad blitz and media blitz suggesting that that's communist.
I just want to see
and all that goes with that. But I think I think we might be at a moment where the right. Where the politics swing in our favor.
I agree. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a quick comment about, you know, the notion of corporate Democrats. And I agree, corporate Democrats exist, and it's infuriating that they exist. And you have to ask yourself why we have corporate Democrats. And it is because they are more likely to listen to those that are funding their campaigns and giving them their money. Remember, a lot of times, you know, lawmakers don't even read the legislation and they have their staffers do it for them because they're out fundraising. That's what they do with most of their time. And so, yeah, the emphasis is who's giving me money, I'm going to represent them more, right? But if we have more political activism and we show that it's an actual liability for them to vote in a corporatist way in regard to healthcare, we can actually fight. We can actually be more influential than money in politics. We just need Americans to be engaged. And I think right now we are seeing that trend. And the question is, are Democrats going to acknowledge that and take advantage of that to vote the right way?
And we need, more than anything else, we need captivating, charismatic leaders to carry that banner. Like policy schmalacy at most elections in this country are about personality and whether you like that person. That to me is always going to be the most frustrating thing about Barack Obama, because he had it.
He had everything.
He had that ability. Mm-hmm. He's not the only one, and there are others. But Bernie, as good as he is, needs, and I'm not disparaging him. He just needs help. He needs others. This can't be Bernie Sanders solely. You need other Democrats,
that's
captivating
right.
personnel, to, because then it becomes impossible to say no one's going to buy that 38 Democrats are communists, right? Like
right.
It's not, especially if they're if they have the ability that the great leaders have to communicate.
Yes.
And so that's what we need.
So we have to take a break, unfortunately. But when we come back, we will give you the details on the lawmakers that I've been talking about. Those who are blatantly obvious, like they're super obvious about the fact that they haven't even read the legislation. And yet they casted a vote for something that will impact Americans. So take a quick break. We'll come right back. Hey everyone, welcome back to TYT. A few TYT lives for you before we get on with the rest of the stories. Marcus says, I love a strong power panel on Fridays. Thanks for motivating us to fight for single payer. Pantera says, in order to have a healthy democracy, the people must be properly informed. Ignorance is a luxury of the past. Okay, I wanna make a quick comment about that. Yesterday, so I made the mistake of checking Twitter, right? And I don't do it often. I don't do it often. But yesterday I was on a plane. We're on the tarmac.
On
I'm like, I have nothing to do.
All I do is be on a plane. It's like all I tweet like 70 times a flight.
Well, Twitter was created for people that are stuck on a tarmac for no reason.
Right.
Right. But anyway, so the person, some right winger tweeted to me, and the headline was, American teenager burned alive by Muslim immigrant. Right? And then he had like a comment toward me and he's like, you still like Muslims or something hateful. I don't know. And I was like, this is not a real story. Of course I click on it. And by the way, the article was about something that happened in Guatemala. There was no American and no Muslim involved. It was essentially a fake news story. It was one of those fake news sites. And so I'm bringing that up because
it was in Guatemala.
It was in Guatemala. Okay. It's scary because there are a lot of people here who do want to be informed, and unfortunately they get swayed by nonsense online, right? And so, yeah, people need to know what's going on and they need to be super, super careful about the sources that they trust, right? So I think like the link was from trueamericanpatriot.com or something like that. I don't know.
It's a good site.
Good site, right? Yeah. Just be skeptical about what you're reading.
They first were called americanpatriot.com and I was like, no.
Not enough.
And then they put true in front of it, and I was like, all right.
Okay, maybe they are patriots. Maybe they are patriots.
I am Sock. Oh, I'm sorry. Gabby Morita.
And you know what? That's the kind of story that forces us to acknowledge that Guatemala is part of the United States.
Gabby Morita says, well, Trump did say that he would get sick of winning, and now he's winning. We're all going to get sick, bigly. So sick, sad.
Very nicely put. I may steal that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was very good.
Very nicely put.
Yeah, sick of winning. Good stuff.
Sick of winning.
All right.
Now he's winning, we're going to get sick. Nice. Stolen.
All right. You guys ready for more?
Yeah.
Can I tell people that I'm doing a live show? Because I'll forget. June 10th in Chicago. June 10th. This is Saturday. There's only 60 tickets left. So get your ticket, and we'll see you May 22nd in Burbank, too. Okay, back to you.
Awesome. And I just wanted to, direct everyone to my Instagram page, because I'm not doing anything outside of TYT. I'm just, fiddling my thumbs and wasting my time. But nonetheless, follow me on Instagram, @AkasparianOfficial. All right, let's move on.
What do you do on Instagram? You take pictures of what?
Myself.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. It's huge. Instagram, the valuation went from a billion to 37 billion.
I found out the other day.
Yeah. Well, I started posting less and doing more Instagram stories because they're fun. It's kind of like Snapchat. It disappears after 24 hours.
Meaning you on camera telling a story?
It could be that, or it could just be something that's happening in front of me at that moment that I think my followers would find interesting.
Oh, so you like shoot it with your phone?
Yeah, you shoot it with your phone. It goes into the story part of the platform, and then after 24 hours, it's gone. So it's fun. Neat. I think you guys should have Instagram pages.
I've been told by my social media person, mm-hmm. It's not a real thing.
I think you have one that was started for you.
I have it, and I did a thing for it at the festival like 2 years ago, and then I thought I would because I liked that. I even liked the 15-second videos like
they're
that.
They're fun.
Yeah, but if I can do that too, I like that, and those can be longer, right?
Yeah, I think they can go up to 30 seconds, maybe a minute. I'm not entirely sure.
All right.
A minute. Yeah, pretty easy.
I don't think I've ever been on Instagram, but the Jimmy Dore Show does have an Instagram account. And then the Jimmy Dore Show does have a Twitter account, but it's not me, it's someone else. And like all of a sudden, 1,000 people are following it. I'm like, what the F?
Damn, you got hijacked.
Yeah.
My father has a Twitter account. I mean, he's been dead 2.5 years, and somebody started a Frank Mankiewicz Twitter account.
Yeah, wow. Can I get some of his followers then?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
All right. Does that work that way? Or?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right, guys. The House of Representatives just voted in favor of the American Health Care Act. That is the plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And of course, it would strip away some of the coverage and the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. Now, interestingly enough, it turns out that some of the lawmakers that voted in favor of this, some of the lawmakers who initially said that they would be against it and then ended up voting in favor of it, didn't really seem to know much about what the legislation entailed. And so we don't have one example, we don't have two examples, we have several examples for you. And I want to start off with Representative Chris Collins. Now, on two separate occasions, he made it very clear that he did not read the legislation. The first time was when he spoke to CNN. Let's take a look.
Did you actually sit down and read the entire bill plus all of the amendments?
I will fully admit, Wolf, I did not, but I can also assure you my staff did. We have to rely on our staff. I had many meetings within energy and commerce.
This legislation affects a fifth of the U.S. economy and millions of Americans. Don't you think it was important to actually sit down and read the language of this bill?
I have to rely on my staff, and I could probably tell you that I read every word, and I wouldn't be telling you the truth, nor would any other member. I understand this bill in its entirety, Wolf, without poring through every word, and I'm just being quite honest. That's the way it is.
It's like one of the rare instances where he's honest and he's like super proud about it. He's like, no, I didn't read the legislation. Now, after that, he had an interview with Buffalo News. And when a reporter for the Buffalo News told Collins that the American Health Care Act would eliminate funding for an optional program adopted only by New York and Minnesota called the Essential Plan, Collins replied, explain that to me. He also said, so for those of you who don't know what that is, and I didn't know what it was because I don't live in those states, it does provide New York with $3 billion annually for a program that offers benefits for low-income residents who do not qualify for Medicaid. So there are people that are, at the poverty line, living in poverty, and they might not qualify for Medicaid, and this was a program that was necessary to kind of fill that gap. And because of the legislation, the American Health Care Act, and the current wording of that legislation, that funding would be stripped away from.
It's a great moment. And again, this is a guy in New York, and I don't think he's in a district that Trump lost, but he is in first of all, I might be wrong about that, but he's definitely in a very, very blue state. Congressman Upton is the guy who came in at the last minute to sort of save this bill from defeat by promising.
By pretending to fix it.
By pretending to fix it with, I think,
$8 billion.
$8 billion for pre-existing conditions,
whatever. But it's only it's only $200 billion short.
So so I'm just interested. So the $8 billion, give me a sense of the $8 billion. This bill struck $3 billion of protections for New York. Right?
Alone.
So, alone. Which didn't cover all of New York either.
Right.
So to give you a sense of how meaningless $8 billion is for the entire country.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, that is a good point.
$3 billion alone won't even cover everybody in New York. He's got $8 billion for the entire country.
It's a little apples and oranges, but that bill, because that's not for pre-existing conditions, but it just is a sense of, we had legislation in there designed to protect low-income people, and it was $3 billion. I'm sure it didn't protect them all. And it's nearly half of.
Oh, I'm sure everybody was covered in New York.
So we got to move along because he wasn't the only lawmaker who made it really obvious that he didn't read the legislation. Representative Mark Sanford from South Carolina. Yes, that Mark Sanford that cheated on his wife with an Argentinian woman and claimed that he was gone because he was hiking. Was recently speaking to Allison Camerota. During the interview, here's what he had to say about his knowledge of the legislation.
Did you read this entire bill?
I wouldn't say every, yes, I turned through every page as to whether or not I got through some of the details in some of the pages, no. But yes, I attempted to read the entire bill.
But you glossed over some of it?
You would, too, if you read through it, yes. But again, it was relatively modest as these bills go. We're talking a couple hundred pages as opposed to a couple thousand pages.
No, this is insane. This is insane. I don't care what excuses these lawmakers have. This is important. And it was a bill that was rushed through. They did not allow for public opinion. They did not allow for proper analysis of how much it would cost. They did not allow for the media to do a proper, analysis of it. So it would give the public the appropriate information necessary to comment. They rushed it, right? And there was no reason. There was no real deadline there, right? They just rushed it. But why? I mean, this is something that's going to have a deep impact on so many Americans. And I looked through the papers and looked through the pages, but no, but it's important. You should know what you're voting for. And why do we give them a pass? Time and time again, why do we give them a pass? And by the way, this whole notion that, Chris Collins said earlier, this whole notion that we got to trust our staff. No, that's not good enough. Can you imagine if I did the show and I got all these facts wrong in a story, and then when people called me out on it, I was like, I gotta trust my staff. Irina Nikita, the executive producer of the show, she gave me a summary of these stories. No, that's not good enough. You have a responsibility to do your job, and they're not doing their jobs.
I agree and disagree. I just think we ought to be aware that these guys don't read most legislation.
Yeah, it's a problem.
I got it, but they couldn't comprehend it if they did. The issue is, if I were in Congress, I don't know, I couldn't read, because I wouldn't understand it, right? It's written in the gobbledygook.
Even with your hair, you wouldn't understand it?
Well, maybe if I did this a lot while I was reading it.
You can tell you would understand it. Just by looking at your hair, I can tell you would understand it.
I sense I'm being mocked, both for my hair and for my statement that you can tell about people from the hair. You can't. You can tell a fraud from a hair.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's reel it back in, guys.
By the way, nothing more important than that today. What you would do if I were in Congress is I would call an independent healthcare group, a actually independent one, or in my case, I would call one that looked at things from a progressive point of view, right? But at the bare minimum, there would also be one slightly to the right of that. It's healthcare. There are responsible parties, and you call them and you say, what are the key components of this bill? Because they understand it, and then they would explain it to me.
No, that's not good enough for me.
That's better than reading. But
you know why? Because here's the reality.
How would you understand it?
You know why? This is why I have the point of view that I do. Okay, what I would do, and this is what a responsible person does, what a responsible adult does. Because I understand that they're not going to comprehend every component of that legislation. I get it. They're humans, right? We're not all intelligent about everything. They're not experts in everything, but I would read the legislation. I would make notes. I don't know what this means. And then I would reach out to expert on it to get clarity and make an informed decision. And that is not what they do.
Well,
okay?
But that's right. Look, we're arguing about semantics here, because the fact of the matter is your staff could brief you on the important points. You're a person in charge of healthcare.
Yeah.
Then you would look at those points and say, here's what I don't understand. Here's what's critical. Here's what we need to do. And then you'd call the person in. And then you wouldn't be stumped by that question, because you'd say, first of all, you could go, yeah, I did. I talked about it with my healthcare staff and I called in these people and they explained to me, I think it's a good bill. But we know that none of that happened in this bill, mm-hmm. because literally every group is against this bill. Everyone
right.
with even a vague tie to healthcare, doctors, nurses, rehab facilities, insurance companies, everyone universally thinks this is a terrible, terrible bill. So we know they didn't talk to anybody who knows.
No, they didn't. They didn't. And you're right. I guess it is about semantics, and that's fine. But I mean, look, and I know this is apples and oranges, but I have to make a quick comparison, because I think it shows the pass that members of Congress get that regular Americans don't get. So let's say this is prior to the housing market crash. You want to buy a home. You go into the escrow process. You make an offer. It gets accepted. And you go through all of the legal documents, all of this stuff. You have to read so many things that you don't understand, right? So let's say the average American just glosses over the papers, just signs their signature without understanding what they're signing, okay? And then when all of these injustices arise, if the American comes forward and says, I didn't read that specific part, I didn't know, do you think that the banks would be like, okay, that's okay.
No,
I mean, you didn't have time. You didn't have time.
I agree.
You were too busy raising money for your bullshit, and you didn't have time. And I'm sorry for getting all angry, but I just feel like there is a certain standard that every single person in this country has to abide by in their jobs, right? But for some reason, members of Congress, the people who literally have the fate of the country in the palm of their hands, don't have to live by that standard. They just don't.
It's just what I object to, I think I got it figured out, is there is a, and I hate to use this phrase because it's usually used by the wrong people, but there is a gotcha aspect to asking somebody whether they read the bill. From the start, what would be responsible for a reporter would be to say, I'm going to ask you about 8 of the key things this bill does.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to tell me whether you get that.
Right.
And that's a meaningful conversation. If Allison Camerota says, it does this, it cuts out, you say it covers pre-existing, it doesn't. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're putting them on the spot. The issue
onus is not on the reporter. I don't care about the framing of the question.
It's meaningless. Did you read it? And then we're like, aha, they don't read 98% of the bills, and that's never going to change. The important thing is, do you understand what you have done? Do you get what this bill does? And that's because I think they do get what this mm-hmm. bill does. And that's the question that I want asked of these guys. And that's the spot that I want to put them in. She did fine. I'm not knocking her. Just in general, that moment of, did you read it? No. And they didn't read the Patriot Act either. And neither did the liberals.
Jimmy, do you want to quickly comment before we go to break?
Well, if I had to read stuff and then ask people to clarify it for me, this is what it would look like. I would probably be like, hey, all this here, could you just tell me what everything means? So that's how I would, because I don't know how shit, I barely can read. So.
Right, but you would be, but I would, I,
you would
but,
at least,
I, but I would vote for you.
Thanks.
Like, and I would know that, hey, Jimmy's probably not reading that whole bill, but he'll get the gist of it. And these guys don't get the gist of it, or worse, I think, do get the gist of it, don't care.
Right.
This
at
is
least
what
he
they
didn't
want.
Say, at least he didn't say the dog ate the healthcare bill, and so he couldn't read it.
Right.
But you know what? You mentioned it very briefly, that the Republicans made a promise. Remember Obamacare? The problem was nobody had read it. I don't want to vote on something we haven't read yet, or the CBO hasn't scored yet. How can we vote on it? So that was Paul Ryan's verbatim words.
But the CBO did score Obamacare.
This is before he said that. Right. So now CBO has not scored this yet, and they have not made, they promised to make every bill they voted on public for 3 days before they voted on it. They did not do this. The public can't even see the frickin' bill. If you voted for Trump because you thought that he was going to be somehow more authentic with the way he dealt with people, or he was actually going to do the things they said, you're just a chump. So this just proves that there's no way to not be a Trump voting these days.
Yeah.
That's the problem, right? The political classes turned their back on America, and this is proof positive of it, because when the Democrats were in charge, and I know there's a lot of pushback to this, and we got to go, but when they had, if this could not have happened, if the Democrats, when they had control and a filibuster-proof Senate, passed Medicare for All Harry Truman's dream, which is what they should have did, but they didn't. And I know that's another argument, so I'll just throw it back to
you. The health care debate in the House, for example, started in 2008 when George W. Bush was still president. The House passed it in October of 2009.
Yes.
Right? There was over a year of
the
Obamacare did not sneak up on anyone.
Right.
So whether the CBO had scored it and they did, or whether you think it was done, the Republicans argued that it was rushed through.
Right.
Nothing was less rushed through than that bill.
Yes.
Correct.
And I remember that very, very well. All right, we have to take one more break. But as we go to break, I want to leave you with one final awesome video related to this story. It's an NBC reporter talking to incoming representatives, asking them if they had read the bill. Their reactions are awesome.
Baseball practice.
Have you read the bill?
Concerned about voting on this bill.
Congressman, have you read the health care bill? Morning, Congressman. Have you had time to read the health care bill?
We're still working on it.
Hey, gentlemen, have you read this bill, Congressman? No, Congressman, have you read the bill?
No, we're in a hurry. We'll be back.
Congressman, have you read the health care bill?
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Young Turks. I do have an update on a pretty big news story from this week. So let's do that. Officer Roy Oliver, the man who shot and killed 15-year-old Jordan Edwards as he was a passenger in a car, has been charged with murder. This is a good development in the story, especially when you consider the details of what happened. The cops were called to a house party where there was a report of underage drinking. At that point, the cops were speaking to the host of the party, and they claimed that they heard gunshots. And then Roy Oliver went outside, grabbed his rifle out of his vehicle, and then proceeded to shoot into a car that had Jordan Edwards in it. And of course, the bullet struck him and unfortunately killed him. He was a completely innocent person. They were trying to get away from the scene.
Initially the officer suggested that they felt threatened by the car.
Yeah, which was
but the car was
a lie.
Now they changed their story, or welcomingly the Dallas police was like, no. The car was not threatening them. The car was driving away from them.
Yes. Yeah. So originally, police had said Oliver fired on the vehicle because it was backing up aggressively toward the officers. But the department revised its accounts after reviewing body cam footage, saying the car was driving away when Oliver shot. And so this is one of the rare instances where the body cam footage actually did have an impact. Because, you know, I always think about the Walter Scott story. And I know that didn't involve a body cam, but it involved footage of Walter Scott running away from a cop as the cop shot at him, right? And it apparently didn't have much of an impact when it came to the grand jury decision to not press charges.
Hold on, so let me get that straight, because I think in the end that sort of did work for two reasons. Because
there was the federal case.
The federal case, but also he was 11 of 12 jurors were ready to convict for either manslaughter or murder, and one juror simply wouldn't go in that case. So like you got a juror who simply wasn't going to convict a police officer, and then they were able to parlay that successfully into a guilty plea at the federal level, and the family is sort of satisfied, and he was going to get convicted at the federal level, where you're less likely to have a juror like that.
Right.
Where there's more, prosecutors control that more.
Right. So I hope that justice is served in this story and in this case. And right now, the news cycle is constantly flooded with Trump-related news. And I think it's a political strategy by Trump and his cronies, but I don't want it to distract from stories like this, because prior to the election, police brutality and excessive force was a big deal, and it was a topic of discussion for everyone. And everyone has moved away from that and focused more on what Trump is doing. What is he tweeting? Who's tweeting in response to it? And I'm tired of it, right? Stories like this matter. The lives of people like Jordan Edwards matters. And we deserve justice. He deserves justice, and his family deserves justice. So I'm glad that there are murder charges here. And we will update you as the story develops.
Yeah, this kid, 15-year-old kid, and by all accounts, a great kid. But it doesn't matter, because he was an innocent kid. Even if he weren't a great kid, as it happens, he was a great kid. And it just strikes me that the cops' version, that they heard noises they thought were gunshots. They were talking to like the owner of the house, and then they ran out to see what was going on when they heard the gunshots. And fired their guns. I mean, it's just it is
without thinking.
Well, at least in his case, yeah. I mean, or thinking incorrectly or whatever. A kid is now dead who was just in a car. He was just in a car.
I know.
So, yeah, again, we don't have to go over it, but the cops are the itchiest trigger fingers in the world. Somehow they all apply to be cops. I don't know what the hell is going on. But I had a cop point a gun at me. I don't know if you've ever had a cop point a gun at you, but I never thought about it until it happened. And then I was like, if this guy shoots me, which he might screw up right now and shoot me, and then they're going to find a gun in my car, or they're going to find drugs in my pocket, or they're going to do something. And it's a horrible feeling to have a cop point a gun at you, anybody to point a gun at you, but especially a cop because you know he's going to get away with it. So go ahead.
In a lot of cases, they do, right? And again, I hope that in this case, especially since there was swift action, in a lot of cases, there's no action.
None.
Right? Hopefully, because there was swift action in this case, there will be some justice. All right, I want to do one more story before we end the first hour, and I'm going to skip ahead to an example of political activism that I think... two examples of political activism that I think is important. Sorry, we're going to go over. Okay. Many are concerned about the House's vote to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, especially because it will do away with some of the protections that Americans need under the Affordable Care Act. Now, student Zoe Salisbury is one individual who wants to take action. She wants to do something that makes it clear to these lawmakers that they're having a negative impact on a lot of Americans. So Salisbury set out to make GOP politicians face the consequences of their vote, launching something known as mailmetothegop.com, a website that pledges to send the ashes of your cremated body to a member of Congress should you die because of the Republican health care plan. So I didn't know this, but you actually can send the ashes of an individual through the mail, but it has to be through the postal service, through the USPS, right? And so we do have a picture showing what the package might look like, okay? And so you can send this to a politician who voted in favor of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. And
guaranteed, is it tracked, insured?
Isn't that funny? It's priority mail. The guy's dead. What's the hurry? Come on. It's not like it's going to go bad. But oh, God, my ashes, they went sour. What? It's dead. Take your time. That'd be a 5-day ground delivery as far as I was concerned. Take your time. Save some money.
We're going to walk this one to Phoenix.
I wonder if it would have any kind of impact on these legislators. I mean, I don't even know if it'll get to them. I'm sure there's someone that looks through their mail prior to giving it to them, and you get a package of ashes.
There was a congressman I wish I could remember on that Rachel Maddow had the clip. She reran the clip. She reran a bunch of the clips from earlier in during those town hall meetings, right? Mm-hmm. And this one guy was sort of an outdoor thing, but this woman spoke to him, and she said, look, he was from New York, and she said, I have a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Affordable Care Act covered me, and I'm scared that the medication I get won't, you know, you have to promise me. And he's a human being, and he hugged her. Mm-hmm. He was like, I got it. We're going to take care of you. And he voted in favor of the Trump care. So, you know, like, I don't think a box of remains is going to have a more powerful moment than hugging a woman with a brain tumor who you're making a promise to, and then you go back and don't. And Rachel Maddow had her on the show, not the congressman.
Right.
So Emily, get this straight. You're poo-pooing the idea of the ashes?
Oh no, I think it's fine. I just think that they are not. This is only politics wins.
Tapping into their humanity isn't necessarily going to make a difference because they lack humanity.
If this swayed the politics, then maybe. But we need someone out there. We need a group of people on a regular basis arguing for whether we're at the point now where single payer will win, but at the bare minimum to preserve this. And then once this is preserved, what I always thought would happen is that then this grows. Then we see the problems in this, and rather the problems with Obamacare are then fixed, and there's only one way to fix them, right? That we, you know, there's a public option, and then
take the profit motive out of it,
right? And then it just goes and goes and goes, and then you have the single payer, and that's that.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if they tried to set up Social Security the way they were trying to set up the Affordable Care Act or whatever. It's like, well, we got to make sure there's a lot of hedge funds that make money off Social Security. You got to have that built in there. You got to make sure that this guy. So that's what they're trying to do, and it just doesn't work that way. And everyone now is, no, the majority of Americans are now in favor, more popular single payer than Obamacare. And Obamacare, by the way, grew in popularity when people found out they're going to take it away from them.
That's right.
And it's single payer is still more popular.
So I want to give you guys another example of some political activism, and I hope this does have an impact because it does put people on notice. There's an organization known as Fight for the Future. Fight for the Future is pro-privacy. It's a nonprofit organization, and they were very much concerned with the fact that our lawmakers voted in favor of allowing internet service providers to sell off our data to third parties. Now, in regard to what these lawmakers did, they wanted to kind of call them out and make sure the American public knows what really influenced these politicians. The group unveiled four billboards targeting Representatives Marsha Blackburn and John Rutherford, as well as Senators Jeff Flake and Dean Heller. All four billboards, which were paid for through donations, were placed in the lawmakers' districts. So let me show you what these billboards look like. This is the one for Heller. He took $345,000 from telecoms, then he voted to let them sell your web history without your permission. I love it. And then you see a similar billboard for other lawmakers. There's Rutherford, and then here's another one for Blackburn. Okay, so I love that it includes the dollar amount, and it really raises some awareness about the corruption that's playing a role in their decision making in Congress.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, a couple little changes I'd make, but those are good. Those are good. Use their first names. They use their first names. Like, don't confuse people. These are not, we're not the most, we don't know who our congressmen are. Dean Heller, Senator Dean Heller, your Senator Dean Heller betrayed you. Just little, help people out. They're driving. They're moving fast.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Oh, or it just says Heller. It should say Senator. You're right.
Senator Dean Heller betrayed
you. You're right. Why are they doing that?
Your senator took $345,000.
That's less of an impact without them.
But they didn't ask me, but that's good. It's good overall. This is exactly
idea.
The right strategy. And this stuff, I mean, it's like so many little things. You know, this is not as important as healthcare, but telecommunications companies selling your browser history, not unimportant.
Pretty extremely important.
You know, and the coalition of people standing up for privacy rights is so small because it's like it's most Democrats, but not all. And then a handful of Republicans who are sort of are the libertarian aspect of them is the strongest part of them or is their defining characteristic. So, you know, if you lose, you know, you lose a couple of those seats and then all of a sudden you're on the losing end and then you're going to get like we're going to lose net neutrality and votes like this. And that is going to have a profound impact in how we experience the internet in the privacy of our own homes.
Should be a bloodbath in 2018. Well, let's see how they
screw
it up.
It should be. One other quick comment I want to make about the billboards. I love that it also includes the phone number for these lawmakers,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Give them a call and give them a piece of your mind. And again, I mean, I keep saying this over and over again, but it's like the one good thing that you can kind of focus on as all these terrible things are happening. People are engaged.
Yeah.
And they are taking to the streets. I mean, how many marches have there been? And many people join them. Many, many people join these marches, right?
If this were a normal country and we decide and we determine these legislative districts normally, I mean, in 2012, where Republicans gained seats, Democrats dominated. You know, they had 1.5 million more votes for the
right.
House. And, you know, I think this year, actually, Republicans had more House votes. But you have to be able to turn that into something useful, right? And it would be much easier if they had more threatened districts. I'm guessing Marsha Blackburn's Tennessee district is safe.
Well,
Dean Heller is gonna lose. 4:07 and 47 seconds in the West Coast on whatever date it is, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, did you see Mike Huckabee's tweet?
No.
He's like, I'm going to watch Speedy Gonzalez cartoons and eat tacos and speak Mexican all day.
He said speak Mexican?
He didn't. He said Spanish.
Oh, my God.
But I mean, like, and I saw Joshua Molina was like, I hate to say, I'm really eager to see what you're going to tweet on Israeli Independence Day. You know, I'm going to wear a giant nose and look for a bargain, you know.
I will not pay retail.
I mean, he's the worst. The guy doesn't get it all. But Dean Heller in Nevada, which was the like the only state in the union in 2016 where you were like, oh, look, Democrats actually did pretty well. And it's a Dean Heller should not, if I were Dean Heller, I wouldn't even run for re-election because you're going to lose.
All right, guys, that does it for hour one. We are going to return with hour two stories. Grace Baldridge will join us. Jimmy's leaving us. He's gone. He's going
to
go.
You have to go.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
All right.
I mean, I'm sorry. I'll see you later. Yeah. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy.
I'll see you June 10th in Chicago. Go to JimmyDoreComedy.com.
Jimmy Dore going home to do a show. That's got to be exciting.
It is exciting. It's fun.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. We will be back in just a minute. Be more.